This is talk number 6 by Jeffrey Hodson at Crotona School of Theosophy, Ojai, on October the 22nd, 1977, entitled Fully Conscious Clairvoyance as an Instrument of Research.
Miss Abenhaus and fellow students, the increasing importance of the third object of the Theosophical Society is nowadays indicated, don't you think, by the widespread psi research, as it's called, leading to discoveries concerning hitherto unexplained laws of nature and, yes, powers latent in man. What are these powers? Well, they include, amongst others, parapsychology, recognition of the existence of supergaseous forces, the possibility of their identification by supersensory perception, a degree of sensitivity to human thought and emotion, not only in ourselves, but even in the plant kingdom, and, yes, more recently, psychokinesis, as it is called, meaning the power to move physical objects and change their shape without contact. And then there has been photographic recording of the discharge of energies from the edges of leaves and even from human fingers. Paraphysics, as it is called. This word and this subject, paraphysics, seems to be bridging the gap between physical and metaphysical states of matter. At least an attempt is being made to apply the methodology and data of the science of man's search for ultimate understanding of himself and the universe. All this is hopefully leading to an advance in that knowledge. Yes, should I say, knowledge of ourselves, whom we are, where we've come from, why we're here, where are we going, and how are we going to get there? How many people you stopped in the street and ask those 5 questions, could answer at all concerning the inner true self of man? Well, fortunately, somebody disagree with me? Well, fortunately, this progress and the teachings of the Theosophical Society and other movements are helping us towards the understanding of the answers to those 5 questions. Paraphysics particularly seems to be bridging the gap between physical and metaphysics. At least an attempt is now being made, isn't it, to apply the methodology and data of science to man's search in answer to the questions I've put, ultimate understanding of oneself and the universe. A step forward for humanity in these our days, one might conclude. The student of theosophy would not, I think, hesitate wholly to agree, affirming, however, that the attainment of supersensory powers alone must not be an end in itself, for there are greater heights still to be reached and deeper knowledge to be attained. Seership in theosophy is regarded only as incidental to spirituality, and it is constantly affirmed there that the highest vision is of unity, one life in all, and the loftiest experiences consist of conscious unification with the life in all other beings. The highest motive put before the student of theosophy is to serve, and the greatest power to uplift, illumine, teach, heal, and serve one's fellow men. A splendid call indeed. Nevertheless, the way of direct knowledge does exist. The fiery power known as Kundalini, about which I shall be speaking later on, can be safely awakened under expert direction, and thereafter can bestow supernormal powers upon man. So you see, there is a way of escape from the net of the transient into the freedom of life eternal. And furthermore, yes, I should add, there is a life in which the fluctuations of terrestrial affairs are of less importance than a passing breeze. When once, of course, the mind is thus elevated. Indeed, it is true that mighty powers do exist within us. You and I, and all our fellow men, latent within us all. And it is true that they may continually, if gradually, be awakened from latency to increasing potency. And thus the evolutionary possibilities and future of man are entirely without limit. Wordsworth speaks theosophically when he writes, "Our destiny is with, our destiny is with infinitude and only there." Research in the field of parapsychology reveals the existence in various people tested of what are also called supersensory powers. What are these powers? What do they include? Well, we might say clairvoyance, clairaudience, precognition, telepathy, and seeing without using any of the five senses of sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. And it's these strange supersensory faculties that we're going to consider together this morning, chiefly in the light of theosophy, which teaches that the evolution of man consists of the increasing manifestation of innate powers, faculties, and capacities, and that as race follows race, so the people therein unfold, learn to use, ultimately quite naturally, faculty after faculty. What is meant then by the word race, as mentioned in Theosophy? Well, something perhaps rather different from what we are accustomed to. The age-old teaching is something like this. There will be seven root races which will ultimately occupy the earth. Each root race unfolds a level of consciousness and one sense. We here present are mostly in the fifth root race. And so we have developed physical, emotional, analytical and abstract mentalities, and there is evidence now of the dawning of a further sense which is called intuition, supra-intellectual awareness. We also have thus developed so far, up to the fifth race, the five senses of hearing. Yes, it is taught in that order, by the by. Hearing, touch, sight, taste, and smell. And here we are, up to the fifth root race through which we are now evolving. The sixth root race, it is taught, is now being foreshadowed. And it will bring about the development and natural use of the faculties of clairvoyance and clairaudience and naturally intuition itself. That's the race to follow our own, the sixth root race. The clairvoyant race, if you like, the intuitive race, we might say. May it come soon, because it is the intuition which perhaps alone reveals, so greatly needed today, the one great truth, that the life in all mankind is one life, and that we all belong to one family. And as this intuitive realization develops, then, perchance, the present dividedness and dangers will be outgrown and will move into a world in which it is realized that, and how we pray for this, that all are one. Sixth root race. And then, yes, before the period of occupation of our globe by mankind comes to a close, there will be the seventh root race, which will affirm, it is affirmed, will develop this full experience of unity and the faculty of clairaudience, or hearing beyond the range of auditory responses. Physically then, the evolutionary development of man consists of the gradual unfoldment of sensory capacities. And as I've just said, we have now developed five. A sixth sense, or group of sensory faculties, is, as I've said, and we all know, is now emerging. And it's emerging, isn't it, so noticeably as to be deemed worthy of scientific investigation, classification in general, and increasing recognition as worthy of study. Our subject together this morning. Can these additional faculties, we might ask, can these additional faculties be developed in advance of the normal period? Theosophy answers yes, and adds that the only conditions under which such occult development may safely and usefully be undertaken are as follows, and may I say them one after another. The only conditions under which occult development in advance of the normal time may safely and usefully be undertaken. What are they? Well, this is very important, friends. A selfless motive, meaning to know more in order more effectively to serve. The one essential motive. Next, a sign of a natural gift. If you've got that, then the possibility. It may not be so far away. Then what else? Guidance from a teacher. A strong and healthy body. Controlled emotions. A stable mind. And physical circumstances, especially obligations, that both permit and point the way. And here I seem to have discovered from theosophical guidances that existing obligations must first be fulfilled. Otherwise, egoic evolution could be delayed by their neglect, which, by the by, could also lead to adverse karma. So throughout all this and all I've said, and all occult development, may I repeat, existing personal obligations must come first, must be fulfilled. Other possible conditions for the development of added faculties, two more. An inborn psychic idiosyncrasy. Probably the key. Most important, an inborn psychic idiosyncrasy. And last amongst my own discoveries offered to you at any rate, and very important too, correct motive, the only true motive indeed, increased capacity to serve one's fellow men. Without these, certain dangers will almost certainly be encountered. Psychic disorders, emotional upsets, mental disturbances, and other breakdowns, even of health itself. Be careful before embarking upon the forcing of evolution along the lines of the senses. Other dangers are, of course, mental self-deceit, pride, and the lust for place and power, one of the gravest dangers. People do go in for the attainment of occult development because they know that if they prove or can suggest that they possess some occult powers superior to others, then they will begin to get some special prestige and even financial rewards. Yes, unfortunately, one sees this development occurring in different fields. And then, of course, there must be a strong moral self-control, for sensuality is also one of the great dangers. And then, yes, I would like to add for your thought from last Saturday's study together, in considering this whole procedure of how you and I and our fellow men may perhaps, if so moved, and these conditions are met, awaken these powers within ourselves. Well, I might add that aspiration towards discipleship of a master would be of very great assistance, particularly, of course, if attained, for a master of the wisdom taking an interest in a potential servant of the race under his inspiration would help, would be a very great assistance, both interiorly by benediction and externally by directing aid from associates of his who might be in the neighborhood. And as I said last Saturday, no one who really genuinely aspires thus is ever overlooked. And so in this study and in such aspiration for additional development, the thought of becoming a disciple would be very valuable. Adeptic guidance and inspiration do indeed become available whenever completely selfless and wholly sincere self-offering to the great brotherhood of adepts has occurred within the heart to help humanity. This is the great and, I would incline to say, only permissible motive on the pathway to hastened attainment and the acquisition of added powers. Discipleship, in fact. Yes, whilst I'm speaking on that subject, another thought might well be added. Adeptic communications make quite clear that under no circumstances does an adept, that is, a great master of the wisdom, who has arisen beyond the limits of humanity into superhumanity, under no circumstances does such an adept ever use spiritualistic mediums as channels of communication. Listen, please, friends. All suggestions to the contrary are false. As every true occultist is fully aware, mediumship implies contra-conscious or even unconscious psychism in entire opposition to my title, fully conscious clairvoyance. Their words in certain letters of theirs are very plain. I quote, "The medium and the disciple are diametrically dissimilar, and the latter acts consciously." That's the fully developed disciple. And I found another statement from them. "You may understand why we oppose so strongly spiritualism and mediumship." May I also add, a warning of the danger. Do remember, won't you, friends, a warning of the danger of playing with mediumship, with table rapping, and all the other so-called mediumistic sensations and faculties. Because once you have ever surrendered your thought and your will to the control and activity upon of another power, you may fall utterly into loss of self-control. I say this with deep feeling, if I may, friends. I've added it to my talk because as a consultant, I'm so constantly being asked by people who have fallen into this error to free them from an obsessive condition, from obsession and overpowering of their minds. And sometimes their will powers have become so weakened that even if one banishes the obsessing agency, the willpower is so weak they can't keep it out. Be warned, won't you? Please. So, whilst not wishing to be dogmatic, there are no dogmas in the Theosophical Society. Nevertheless, as a person, I may affirm that literature containing communications claimed to have been received by entranced mediums from adepts must be recognized as totally spurious. Whenever possible, all occult experiences and discoveries should be fully conscious and in addition, yes, severely tested against established facts and the demands of logic on all occasions. The greatest thing in science is the scientific method, which means rechecked observations and experiments, objectively recorded with absolute honesty and without fear or favor. Science in this sense has as yet scarcely touched the common man or his leaders, says one writer, but it is of the utmost importance that all who approach occult development should do so with the scientific method. Now, what faculties would be developed? What would be the result? Well, again, I'm avoiding all negative psychism and referring only to fully conscious supersensory powers. What are they? As they begin to be developed and can be greatly increased. Well, I see in my notes I've classified them under physical and superphysical. Now, when you're wide awake, then physical. What are the physical forms of clairvoyance? Well, X-ray vision, the power to see through solid objects. Very useful, for example, in clairvoyant diagnosis of disease. Because it enables, X-ray clairvoyance, enables the seer to observe within the body itself without having recourse to any kind of necessary experiments. So X-ray vision is one of the faculties. Another one is magnification. The well-developed clairvoyant can magnify minute objects to almost any size. The atom can be thus studied and has been studied as if instead of being beyond the range of physical vision, it is huge, even as the universe. And then again, magnification, yes, and telescopic vision, the ability to see what is taking place at a distance, whether in the neighborhood or however far away. Very helpful also when there are difficulties, trials, or even obsessions taking place a long way off. Perhaps the trained clairvoyant could see the nature of these obsessions and with telescopic clairvoyance assist in the healing of the trouble. Then, I think still within the realm of the physical, but supergaseous, there is what we might call etheric vision. What would happen to us if we had some etheric vision? Well, many have, as I know as I travel and hear from them of their experiences. Some see, and some of you may have seen, dancing in the air, myriads of little golden and silver points of light. If you do, you're seeing the vitality which has reached the air of our earth from the sun. A glowing golden group of little globules. They're called, by the by, the vitality globules. It is on these that our vitality for the body is assured and absorbed. I'm tempted to stray off, but I mustn't do so too much. I might add there, however, that the clairvoyant diagnostician would be able to tell whether a sufferer, perhaps from lowered vitality or other causes, is failing to receive their full supply of the solar vital energy. Then help can perhaps be given. So that's one of the products, should I say, of etheric clairvoyance. Seeing the vital energies from the sun, the vitality globules. Then again, seeing the etheric double itself. Its condition in both good health and ill health. Oh dear, I haven't time to this morning go into a description and explanation of the etheric double, but it is a kind of double of the physical body, of the same shape, built of supercaseous or etheric matter, and it pervades the whole physical body. And one of its big functions is to receive and distribute throughout the physical organs this wonderful solar energy, the vitality forces, so that the etheric double can be studied not only in itself as it's in the physical body, but its discharges. Now, when a person is really well, the etheric discharges, which perhaps some of you will have seen radiating from bodies or plants or other objects. In perfect health, all the radiations are at direct right angles to the area from which they emanate. They're shot straight out. In perfect health. Now, if a person is not in perfect health, then there's a drooping of the etheric discharges. One of the first symptoms which the clairvoyant diagnostician looks for, sees, and then tries to penetrate deeper into the etheric double itself, and so a bodily area for the cause, what's the matter in there. So this form of clairvoyance etheric vision can be very valuable in that way also. Diagnosis of health and disease. What else does etheric clairvoyance reveal? Well, if you are of that type of personality, hosts and hosts of nature spirits, fairies of all kinds, gnomes of earth, undines of water, sylphs of air, and so on, the elementals of fire, who are all around us and all about us, when normally invisible, but with etheric clairvoyance, they soon begin to become visible, catching the eye as they run about the room or out in the garden, and so on. And then, of course, there opens up a whole field of fascinating study, leading to another kingdom which requires higher powers, the kingdom to which they belong, the kingdom of which they are the juniors, the angelic hosts themselves. Yes, but not by etheric clairvoyance, but higher emotional and mental clairvoyant faculties, and still higher, could enable the awakened person not only to see the little nature spirits, but their elders, the angelic hosts, right on up to the great archangels of various degrees and orders themselves. A wonderful field of study in its turn. Then, for want of time, friends, superphysical vision. This means that whilst awake, one can know what the emotional and mental bodies are experiencing. This enables one to make a study of the procedure of natural death and to follow the deceased inner person into the life after death. It grants the capacity for fully conscious travel, superphysical activities with full memories brought into the brain whilst they are occurring, opening up thus another wonderful way of life. And then again, there is, with superphysical clairvoyance, the possibility of occult research into superphysical worlds and their inhabitants, plane by plane, which includes, of course, the nature spirits and the angelic hosts, thought forms and thought forces. Now, there's a fascinating subject which I mustn't try to explain, except, yes, that every time we think, friends, we make a form of mental matter, which is an exactly appropriate manifestation of the type of thought, in shape, in color, whether it lasts or whether it disappears. Oh, the whole world of thought forms, a wonderful world, may thus be entered by those who have superphysical clairvoyance. And then one more form of clairvoyance is the capacity to read what perhaps I should name the memory of nature. Is there such a thing as a memory of nature? Is there a record of everything that's ever happened? Occult science answers yes, there is. There is an indelible record of every event that ever occurred on this earth, and everywhere, in fact. And there is a substance upon which the record is established. We don't know of it. We only know of the four elements of earth, air, water, and fire, and now we're beginning to know about the ether, a fifth. There is another, which has a Sanskrit name. It's called A-K-A-S-H, some of you will know about it, I'm sure, Akasha. Now, the Akasha has an important function in nature, one of which is, important functions, one of which is to receive upon itself, in its neighborhood, an indelible record of everything that's ever occurred in that neighborhood. A person, for example, endowed with this faculty of reading the Akashic records, as it's called, could sit here by this table and see and even hear and know the whole history of this table, from back into the wood, wherever it was gathered from, and even the early days of that tree, right on through the carpenter, right on to every lecture, every individual who's ever come here. For the whole of it, I know this will sound strange, but if you've had glimpses, you will know how true it is. The whole record is established on the Akashic double of and region of this table. And so the reading of the Akashic records is both of recent and historic past times is possible, so that the past history of the globe is readable by those who have this faculty. And then, I'm coming to a close, friends, there is clairaudience, which is an extension of the normal auditory range, including, yes, at least five forms of clairvoyance or clairaudience. What would they be? Well, if you're clairaudient, you know, you would be able to experience superphysical communion, not sensory only, with the deceased, with the angelic hosts, with the great rishis, mahatmas, masters of the wisdom. There is a faculty latent in us all, will be developed in the seventh race, under which that form of clairaudience will be normally used. What else does clairaudience give? Well, the capacity to hear the inner voice, whichever speaks, the divine voice, the voice of the God Self within, ever seeking to reach us, calling to us to attain to the heights. Then also the power to hear the heavenly music of the divine creative word. For all is created by sound. And all of these faculties should be included in what might be called conscious clairaudience. There would also be added to such people who had these developments the power of mind reading and telepathy, and perhaps highest of all, yes, self-realization. The fifth of the great faculties, self-realization. Awareness of and within one's spiritual self, and the consequent merging of all dualities into unity. Also affecting the mind, yes. Direct perception of interior truths. Full realization as an immortal spiritual being, forever at one with God and through Him with all that lives. And this is the highest faculty of all. Cosmic consciousness, it's called. This is the real goal. Oh, these other faculties dealing with the various bodies and bringing added knowledge, if usefully employed, are important, yes. But the great goal, ever let it be remembered, is to attain cosmic consciousness in which one is unfailingly and forever fully aware that there is one life in all that exists, from mineral through all plants, animals, human beings, angelic hosts, pulsing within all is this wondrous divine life, the life of the Godhead itself within and throughout our universe. Friends, may it ever be remembered that this is the true and the highest goal. There, for want of time, I must close. I thought I would do so by repeating, perhaps meditating again together upon that wonderful prayer which is to be found in Kabbalism. Kabbalism is the theosophy or hidden inner wisdom of Hebraism, and within it all of this is to be found. Now, there's a wonderful prayer which many of us have uttered mentally together. May I close with it? Because it defines so marvelously and leads to this experience. In fact, friends, if it's not taking a liberty, I will repeat the prayer with a pause after each line, so that we may think of it. And at the end of the prayer, before I say Amen, we will pause a little together to contemplate the glory of oneness with the all-pervading, all-knowing, all-powerful divine life. So now we close. The Kabbalist's prayer. Universal God, one life, one light, one power. Thou all in all, beyond expression, beyond comprehension, O nature, thou something from no thing, thou symbol of wisdom. In myself, I am nothing. In thee, I am I. I live in thee. Live thou in me. And bring me out of the region of self into the eternal light. Amen. Thank you, friend.
On this tape, Jeffrey Hodson is answering questions after his talk on fully conscious clairvoyance as an instrument of research.
Many Christians throughout the world look to an imminent second coming of Jesus Christ. This is their hope in a troubled world. What validity is there in this idea, in your opinion?
I have no opinion.
on that subject. There's one thing I've learnt, friends, in my small groping studies, it is, never prophesy. If your prophecy turns out to be untrue, then your whole philosophy is gone. Therefore, as far as I'm concerned, although it may limit my usefulness, I don't venture into the realm of the future where personal beings are concerned. You know, I'm tempted you know that one of your own poets, Angela Morgan, whom I had the privilege of meeting, she wrote that lovely short poem called Passports. I'll recite it to you. How thou thy cry at heaven's gate, God must admit thee, soon or late. Thy passport, saints could ask no more, his image at thy very core. So whether there's an external manifestation or not, wonderful though that might be, the real presence is ever within. Ever within. Yes, another poem, may I share? Angelus Silesius, the famous Austrian mystic. Though Christ 1,000 times in Bethlehem be born, and not within thyself, thy soul will be forlorn. The cross on Golgotha thou lookest to in vain, unless within thyself it be set up again. So I find my own thoughts following those of St. Paul. Christ in you, the hope of glory. And know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you. And as for the coming of our Lord again, so greatly hoped and longed for doubtless, his words were wonderful, I think, to the disciples, for he knew that he would be leaving them. He said these wonderful words, I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. It's the interior Christ, surely, which never fades, never leaves, and is ever present, if only realized. Do you consider Kabbalistic teachings better for the West than the East Indian? Can both be followed safely? Yes. They're identical. They're identical. So yes, the answer, yes. Please comment on the work of Edgar Cayce, who did all of his work while in trance. Was his work of a higher or lower order of clairvoyance? Sorry, friend, I never met him, wasn't present, and therefore I never presume to judge cases that I myself have not investigated. Please excuse me, I don't know. I have heard that he helped many people, but of the accuracy of his discoveries and descriptions of former lives, I'm sorry, I can't comment. I might just say this to you, though, that the discovery of a person's, the accurate and true discovery of a person's former lives is one of the most difficult forms of clairvoyant vision, almost that it's possible to seek to follow. And so in all of these cases, we'd better be careful in giving our full assent. Nevertheless, where help is received, one can only be grateful. Should clairvoyance be encouraged in small children? And if so, how and what should be aware of? Not at all, not at all. I venture to ask. I've had several cases of this, and examination of them has led me and Sandra to the conclusion that leave the child alone. Don't encourage. If they want to play with it or say it, be interested, but don't encourage and draw them out. They will naturally develop, and you will find they'll develop out of it, as the fifth and ordinary intellectual senses take hold. But it's true, and I do know of many cases of children who were remarkably clairvoyant. In fact, I shall be showing you photographs of two a little later on. The two girls who were responsible first for seeing and photographing the fairies in Yorkshire in England. I know them well and was with them at the time and spent hours and hours with them. And I can vouch for their clairvoyance, absolutely. And although they have to some extent denied, as you'll find me explaining in a few weeks' time, denied their statements, actually they saw and they know. And I have it from mutual friends. They still saw up. But they say the publicity became unbearable. They simply had to withdraw. But they were very good examples of your question. Yes. Can ESP be developed exclusively to avoid hitting animals in the road? And if so, how? You don't really hardly need it. Be very watchful yourself with your eyes. Wherever possible, use the five senses, friend. And surely the five senses, especially sight, if clearly and accurately and open-mindedly aware, should be sufficient to prevent too much of this unfortunate hitting, not only of animals, friends, but of children. As for that child last week, quite close here, who ran out of his gateway from his home, right in under a car and was instantly killed. Yeah. That would be too short a time, even for clairvoyance, I should imagine, to get the break on. And also, of course, might I say that clairvoyance doesn't necessarily act any more quickly than physical sight. But probably what you mean is the person might have had a foreshadowing of it as a future event and be more aware. That's possible, I think. And I have driven with people and I think known myself. Just be careful going along here. There might be something. If you get that sensation, even if it doesn't turn out to be valid, never mind, watch carefully. So many claim to be teachers. How can one know and feel safe? Which is a true qualified teacher? The person who teaches one thing, advance in knowledge and everything else, for one motive, to become an ever increasingly effective servant of one's fellow men. If you've got that, then you're reasonably safe. And if the heart is pure,
And especially, friend, there's no thought, no hint somewhere in the back of their minds of personal gain, you know, to want to build up their pride and position and prestige, or even if they're in some kind of business, to build up their business, you know, or their profession, whatever it might be. The motive, the one testing motive, is total and absolute selflessness. The absolute absence of the slightest thought of self-gaining and the utter refusal ever to self-gain. Utter, utter. Those are the safeguards. Now, while those are obeyed, no harm. If the other rules I gave you are followed. Yeah, I've got a shame. Look and see if there's anything. No. Just see if there's anything on that. If one says that literature of mediumship must be recognized as totally spurious, what does this do to the secret doctrine? Madame Blavatsky wasn't never for one moment personally unconscious or in a medium's mystic trance. Whether she was writing Isis Unveiled, whether she was writing The Secret Doctrine, or any other of her wonderful articles, letters, and books like The Voice of the Silence, never once. We are assured, and we have the assurance from her, never once did she allow herself to become an unconscious trance medium. Please, friends, believe that. It really is so. Was so, I will say. Were you born clairvoyant, or did it develop and unfold later in your life? Please excuse the personal self. Excuse me, won't you? I don't like talking about myself.
No, but when a little boy, you had that vision of the war in the sky. The good say, you say you had that vision of the war. You thought we were sensitive. You had
that. Sandra thinks I perhaps ought to.
No,
answer.
I want him to give one illustration of when he was a little boy. He was a child.
Yes, you're quite, as I remember now you mention it, Sandra. When I was a young boy, I lived on a great estate, 1,000-acre farm and so on, in Lincolnshire, in England. And I went to school early on my donkey first, and then pony. And one day when I was going through these vast open fields, no houses anywhere near, I looked up into the sky. I was about 5 or 6 years old. And lo, there in the sky was a great war going on. And there I knew nothing. I didn't know the worst thing of soldiers and uniforms and guns and everything. Didn't know the worst thing. There in the sky, I saw what I now know was warfare going on in the air. The two sides and the colored uniforms and smoke, I suppose, from guns. So perhaps, Sandra's suggestion, I ought honestly then to answer your kind and interesting question. Yes, I suppose I was born with a certain small amount of clairvoyant faculty.
It could have also been a prevision, because you were in the war from the first day to the last, weren't you?
Yes. The First World War. Sandra thinks that it could have been a prevision of my 5 years of military life. Yes. I have seen the etheric double at highly charged spiritual times. Is there a safe way to see at will? And should this be done? Well, only if all the conditions I gave you, friend, can be met. I think I gave you 7, didn't I? Good health, obligations, and motive, and all the causes I gave you, I was careful to classify the governing principles as to whether one should go in for certain development. I think as I sit here with your question in my hand, I feel inclined to advise great caution, great care. Great caution, great care. Yes, one indication for you, friend, might be whether you've had any personal interior guidance which has suggested into your mind that you might study the subject and proceed. But do remember that if you do, only for the sake of adding to the knowledge of humanity for its benefit, solely and absolutely without the faintest thought or film of selfhood as motive for the project. That will protect you. That will protect you from much harm. As I'm inclined to add there, I think if we are, if it is indicated that we should interest ourselves in these faculties, then I think a senior in evolution will approach us and will offer guidance and help themselves in relationship with a still greater being. That would be a very good guide, friend, if some senior in evolution came to you and offered to give you sound guidance. There again, be careful, and always remember the test, the motive. If there's the slightest touch of self, beware. Can we see the Akasha radiating from the body like we see the etheric? No, it doesn't radiate. It's all around in the air and within. The etheric radiations shoot out, much as they've been photographed by the Kirlian photography and other Russian and other experiments. If you see it, some of you will have done, it shoots out from the fingers up to about here. And also, if you see it at all, you'll find your fingers are etherically webbed. It joins across like that. So that's a distinct external radiation from every part of the body. And in health, the radiations are straight up. In decline, ill health, temporary or not, there's generally a drooping from the area where the difficulty exists. Now, this is not the case in the Akashic records. There are no radiations of that kind.
Just announced that this is available. This summary
of your talk. Oh, good. How good of you. Available?
Right.
I'm informed, as we were all told last week, that on the platform here, the School of Theosophy at Crotona has made copies of my statement of the rules under which faculties might safely be developed. And so they're down here. Please, friend, who's asked for guidance, there it is. Come up and help yourself if it will help you. Oh, yes. The whole of it is here. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Would you please explain a little more about the Akashic process? Oh, my dear, is it the end of a lecture? Every object is surrounded by its own history. For instance, if I handed my watch to a rightly psychic person and they were able to read its Akashic records, they would see me, for instance, see me wearing it, they would see scenes in my life, they might see this moment, and so on. All as a, not as a radiation, but as something intimately, oh, I've got the words, something intimately built in to the structure of the object itself. I have a little of this myself, and in order not to seem to evade the question, carried out some research in South Africa under a doctor of paleontology into this whole question of the origin of man and emanation from the preceding stage, in which we, both humans and apes, evolved from the same single source. And there I was taken into a deep cave or hole in on the veld in South Africa, where these wonderful findings had been found. And they were all fossil. All I saw was a little bit of dirt, a fossil bone. But I do, and I was asked if I could, with my great limitations, pottering along, if I could say a word or two. And I do remember that I was offered a piece of, well, I didn't know, but it was a piece of bone of an animal. And I described it as an ape. And the doctor said, well, yes, an ape, yes, but has it got a tail? So I said, I don't know, it's sitting down. However, eventually it rose and I was able to say yes or no. So I only, this is not self-praise, my powers are very limited indeed. They hardly exist. But just to show you by illustration what the Akashic influence is. Does the same principle which applies to mediumship apply to hypnosis? What are some of the benefits and dangers of hypnosis? Much the same as I gave you this morning, and you'll find on the sheet which is on the platform here, exactly the same kind of dangers. So that what applies to one will apply to the other. But I must just, I think, differentiate between mediumship and hypnosis. The result is the same. Both are physically lacking in control of themselves, in both cases, in varying degrees and conditions. They're very much the same, friends. And therefore the dangers and usefulnesses are, I recommend you to read my small contribution. Do you consider alternate breathing safe at the time? Don't know the phrase. How ignorant I am. I don't know what you mean. Oh, alternate breathing. In one nostril and then in the other, do you mean? I suppose yes. Oh, well, yes. Very useful if you learn to do it. Yes. Yes. Various forms of pranayama can be very useful indeed. Yes. And one of them is right and left nostril breathing. That's pranayama. Belongs to hatha yoga. Can be useful, especially in the early stages of the arousing of higher faculties. Yes. Again, all of those warnings apply absolutely to this too. Do be careful, especially with regard to motive. Why I didn't mention it. You see, you can You can, if you, you, any of us have, in former lives, as many of us probably have, in former lives studied these subjects and practiced some of these developments, very well, then we will be born with a natural, two things, a natural interest and a natural tendency, so that when we take it up, we might get results fairly soon. Yes, that is so. And therefore, be very, very careful. Be very, very careful that you don't too early awaken certain powers like Kundalini and get into serious trouble. That I will go into fully next Saturday, if you're interested. Here's one seeking personal advice. Not my work friends. Excuse me. No, so sorry. I can neither give personal advice from a question, and also, again, my old friend or enemy comes in, request about the future. That I have learned absolutely to avoid, and I hand on the warning. Please give some helpful light on the suffering of all the little ones, in quotes, i.e. animals, slaughtered for food, etc., etc. My dear friend, I'm with you wholly. I was the founding president of the Vegetarian Society in New Zealand, still very active, Sandra Vice President, and written and books and so on the subject. And I'm deeply moved and fully with you in this whole question of, first of all, the right treatment of animals, and secondly, the awful cruelty inseparable from the meat trade. You know, friends, that reminds me of another wonderful Indian ideal. It has a Sanskrit name. It is A-H-I-M-S-A. Ahimsa. A marvelous ideal. Marvelous ideal. It means, just literally translated, the letter A in Sanskrit always means no, contrary, no. Himsa, hurting. So, very literally translated, not hurting, absent of given pain. It's a great ideal, followed by certain of the sects in India, very much so. Some of them even wear veils over their faces, over their mouths, so that their breath wouldn't injure microbes. And so on, carry it to that great extreme. But ahimsa is not only not hurting sensitive humans, subhumans, and all of that. It's a condition, I understand, of consciousness. Harmless mind, harmless feelings, harmless words, harmless hands, till the whole being becomes an incarnation of compassionate harmlessness. Wonderful ideal. Yes, friend, I'm wholly with you. Are vitality globules on the astral plane? I don't know. They are on the etheric. I don't remember. No, I don't know a reading about that, but I can assure you they are on the physical. At the etheric level, of course. Though they're not difficult to see. It is a fact that someone I know can read my mind. Is there a way on my part to prevent this? Yes, friend, it's too personal. I would need to investigate the individual case. All these kind of things are very individual, and what might apply to one, not to another. So one needs to investigate why and from whom and what's the relationship between you. No. So I'm sorry, I can't give you a general answer to that. Someone I know can read my mind. Is there a way? Can you think of anything? There's a way. No, I can't help you, friend. Sorry. Just out of my range.
Keep away.
Yes, Sandra says keep away from that person. She has a very practical mind. Do angels and archangels take a series of human evolution? Well, one must be awfully careful about dogmas. I mustn't be dogmatic here. What I can say is that I've read in various books that during a particular solar system, like our own, apart from special cases, which do happen, the angelic hierarchy remains itself as a group of angels and does not transfer over to the human, far as I know. Then there will be, and have been, of course, earlier universes in which the human kingdom was entered. And we in our turn may possibly in the future or in the past be evolving through the angelic hierarchy. Two great methods of unfoldment, you see. But as far as I know, with certain exceptions, which I have met, it's rare indeed, if ever, for a member of the angelic hierarchy to enter a human form. I do know of cases, but very, very rare. So the answer, on the whole, if I may say so, no. For those who meet qualifications, what practical steps may then be taken towards development of the supernormal powers latent in man? Practice of meditation. Take up yoga. Practice yoga. Go get hold of a really good, reliable book on yoga and practice the seven. Find out the one that suits you and practice it regularly. And that is the way. It's a form of meditation and prayer. Purification of life. You'd have to eliminate alcohol, wouldn't you? You'd have to tobacco, narcotics, tobacco, all narcotics, meat, or any flesh food, because those all intend to low, apparently decrease the frequency of vibration. So those would all have to be left behind. Then, as I said this morning, the ideal would have to be for the service of humanity. And then take up the practice of meditation. And for that, I think there are five necessities. One, a strong urge it's sometimes described as a yearning. One has within one such a tremendous aspiration to the heights that really nothing else matters at all. And that's been translated as yearning. Then the next is regularity in meditation. Every day. Not a sudden rush and a few weeks of ardent meditation then sort of getting tired. Next, privacy. Next, posture and breathing. And then fifth, the right direction of the mind to the attainment of realized unity with the Supreme Lord of all life. That's the way, friend. The ancient road, and I know of no other. The aim is unity. Is that all, or too many? Well, as there are no more, whilst I was saying that aim is unity, I thought of a story. So I've told it to you here before. So excuse me if it's repetitive for some of you. It's such a wonderful illustration of that ideal. Here's the story before we part. It took place in India. And there was an Indian family in a village who had a son born who from very early in life showed signs of remarkable intelligence and knowledge of the religion and even the various mantras or chants, sacred chants belonging to the family and the religion. And almost learnt them and knew them and chanted them and seemed to be a wonderful child. So the parents thought, well, this child had better have every chance, like in answering your question. Nearby, as is not unusual in India, there was a yogi in residence in just his hut where they live and his ashram and will give guidance and themselves are practicing yoga. And so they advised their son to go and go to this yogi. The little boy was only about 5 or 6 or 7 years old and tell him, ask him if he would take him as a disciple. Well, the yogi was seated inside his fairly small hut and facing a fairly open front door. And then on this side of him there was a rather narrow window. And lo and behold, this little fellow appeared before the yogi one morning. And so the yogi said, well, what can I do for you, my son? My parents have sent me to ask you to take me as your disciple, sir. Disciple, he said. Aren't you very, very young to want to be a disciple? No, sir, that's all I want to be. Well, what are you doing with your life? What do you do? Well, sir, I help my parents and I drive the buffaloes to the water every evening. No, that has to be done because they absorb their moisture, not only by drinking, but through their skin. So the buffaloes have to be taken to the wallow every day. So I take the buffaloes to the wallow, sir. Oh. And I meditate, sir. Oh, see. Well, and what do you want then? Well, I want you to take me as your disciple, sir. All right then. Then you will go home and you will continue to do your duties. And every evening you will come to this window here and you will call out to me. Tell me you're there and tell me how you've been getting on during the day. And so the little boy thanked him, went on. And every evening there was a little voice up at the rather lofty window. Good evening, master. Good evening, my son. Here I am again. And what have you been doing today? Well, I've been serving at home, sir, and I've been meditating on the buffalo. That's right, you must meditate on the buffalo every day. You know that, don't you? Yes, sir, I'll do that. All right, come again tomorrow. Cut a long story short, this went on and on. Until one evening, the little voice was heard. Good evening, master. Good evening, my son. What have you been doing today? Said, I've been meditating upon the buffalo, as you told me, master. Oh, well done, my son. Come along in then. Come along in, as you've done before, through that window. Well, there was a lot of scrabbling went on. No boy. And so the yogi said, come along in, my son. What's the matter? Why don't you get in? He said, master, I can't get in. Why not? My horns are too wide. The whole secret. Thank you. Good morning.